you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Welcome to the Twilight Histories. You are about to pass through a wormhole into a different universe. If you want to survive, you can't just be a tourist in this world. You must become the people you explore. Today, you will journey to a world where the caliphates of Islam are beginning to spread beyond the Pyrenees of medieval Europe. Muslim forces have seized Provence and have carved out a fiefdom that is the envy of Europe's princes. You will join the ranks of a mercenary force working for the Muslims and uncover a treacherous plot to destroy the realm. Please put on your costume now while I continue your orientation. This show is entirely supported by our Patreon community and would not have happened without their generous support. When you join our Patreon community, you will get access to shows not available to the public, and you may even get your ideas produced into Twilight History shows. Please join us on Patreon by going to the website at twilighthistories.com and follow the link. Well, you look great. The wormhole is open. Now, please step on the platform and let's get you on your way. This is Welcome to Fraxinetum by Kevin Valpanese.
You stand atop a dry yet verdant hill, looking out at the modest peaks which stretch out as far as the eye can see. Shielded from the harshest rays of the Mediterranean sun by the branches of a particularly tall Aleppo pine, you can enjoy the view and the fragrance of the forests blanketing the nearby peaks. A light breeze washes over the land, turning every pine needle and crisp leaf into tambourines. The melody of what would one day be known as the Massif des Morts echoes out across the mountain range. If you could, you'd stay here forever, but yawns and groans coming from behind you signal the end of your sightseeing. Turning back, you see your comrades fastening their sandals and drinking the meager rations of wine from thick bladders. They are all dressed in colorful tunics and dark trousers, with light cloaks fastened around their shoulders. Their olive skin, ruddy blonde hair, and general air of haughtiness marks them out as Lombards. One among your number differs in their garb, however. Leaning against the trunk of the majestic pine is a man with a decidedly more flamboyant flair, sporting polished scale armor and bright red boots. His short, straight hair, strong jaw, and defined brow make him almost a prototype for the marble busts which once decorated the abodes of patricians. You've come to know this man as Raimondo, a native of Genoa, the second son of a wealthy merchant family. Stretching his arms out, Raimondo steps forward, looking right past you and out over the mountains. He rests one hand on the hilt of a longsword fastened to his waist, and he gestures with the other at a distant peak in the east. Your merry band assembles around him, waiting on the word of their commander.
What do you say, everyone? Shall we head east today? There is a charming little village in the river valley over there. I think it will make for a leisurely patrol.
Everyone nods in agreement, and it's but a minute or so before everyone is sorted out and ready to march. Following Raimondo's lead, you descend the hill, winding your way between dry shrubs and jagged rocks. You follow Raimondo near the head of your loose column, enjoying the whimsical whistling he practices and the novelty of each tune. You wonder what remains of Roman flutes in these medieval melodies, and how much derives from the rowdy song shared between barbarians around their campfire. Accompanied by Raimondo's melodious oeuvre, You wind your way through the valleys, passing old Roman milestones and the crumbling remains of neglected chapels. All of your comrades, save Raimondo, cross themselves at every sacred rubble heap, though you can tell the act is more out of habit than true devotion, for none cast a lingering gaze at the holy heaps. You continue on in this way until you near the peak of a modest mountain, which Raimondo assures everyone is the last you'll have to overcome. As you carefully avoid the crunched husks of chestnuts and the loose stones which littered the approach to the summit, you hear something else carried on the wind. Raimondo ceases whistling, and for a moment, you all halt and listen, focusing on the mysterious melody. You do your best to ignore the rustling of leaves and the occasional blast of the Provençal gales. You think, perhaps, that you hear the chants of some distant monks within their monastery, but the inflection and then the words themselves betray the true origin. Beginning your march again, you crest the mountain, and looking down the valley at the plains and the farms surrounding a riverside village, you see all the farmers laying on rugs in the field, their heads bowed southeast, in the direction of Mecca. The transfixing words of the Zur echo out across the landscape, compelling all the faithful to submit themselves to the Supreme Being, putting aside all worldly matters to focus on the divine. Raimondo keeps a hand raised to enforce a halt while the prayer lasts, waiting until the final echo of the final word dissolves back into the wind. Once the residents of the valley return to their business, you descend the mountain, passing into the richly cultivated farmland. You march among the buckwheat fields, looking over at the farmers who tend to their crops. Everyone you see is of Arab or Berber descent, Saracens, as you've heard your comrades describe them. Sunburnt skin and thick beards greet you as the residents come to watch your column pass through their land. You spy the odd cow or goat grazing in the area, but there is not a swine in sight. Reaching the village, you find the source of the earlier call to prayer. Built into what must have been a late Roman temple, you find fresh, colorful bricks supporting modest minarets, and within them you see the elderly muezzin sheltering themselves from the sun and drinking water to quench their labored throats. The structure is remarkable, with the ancient stones polished to newfound radiance, and what you can see of the tight interior is likewise immaculate, if unadorned, save for the ornate arabesques which the ablution fountain is adorned with at the entrance. The village itself is what you'd expect of a post-Roman settlement. Homes are fashioned from a hodgepodge of stone, some freshly quarried and others seized from the remains of older structures. The residents, however, surprise you. Living completely unmolested and apparently carefree are the Christians of Provence. Reddish and blonde hair meet you at almost every turn, with the Frankish peasants going about their day in relative indifference to the Muslims who also frequent the village. In the heart of the city, which you presume to have been the old forum, you see young Frankish men working alongside their Muslim neighbors to cut and shape timber. There are also stalls selling grilled meat, bushels of wheat, and fresh fish from the river. You even spy Frankish merchants in their long robes haggling with their Saracen counterparts over the price of furs. It's a short walk to the riverside where a few ships, including the one merchant vessel, float in the relatively calm waters. There, Raimondo orders a halt and directs your merry band to split up and have a look around. When pressed about whether you are looking for anything in particular, Raimondo merely shrugs and says, "Any gem among the pebbles will do." Stranger, perhaps, than the peaceful coexistence of the two Abrahamic cohorts is the utter disregard that the locals have for Raimondo's men. Marching around in pairs, your comrades chat amongst themselves in the Lombard dialect, which even now offers a stark contrast to the fledgling Provençal tongue, and is a world away from the Andalusi dialect spoken by the local Muslims. As you accompany Raimondo on patrol, you can't fathom how nobody so much as raises an eyebrow at you as you poke around the stalls. Awkward as you make the whole ordeal, every time you return to Raimondo to report nothing, he merely smiles and shakes his head.
Benvenuto a Fraxinetum, he jests.
But Raimondo's jovial air vanishes quickly as he marks something off in the distance. Tapping you on the shoulder, he points to a wealthy merchant speaking with a rather roguish character behind a small chapel. The merchant, quite lavish in his dress and quite animated in his gestures, looks like the last person this cutthroat would be speaking with.
You go around the side. I will take care of the rogue.
Raimondo quickly dashes off to the side, looking to come around and behind the cutthroat. You, meanwhile, unarmed as you are, go around the other way, intent on catching the merchant. You're grateful for the easy assignment, unarmed as you are. And small as the village is, you quickly find yourself and Raimondo closing in on your targets. The cutthroat notices you coming and turns to bolt away, but Raimondo is on him, kicking his legs out from under him. The cutthroat rolls back and gets to his feet, drawing a dagger from within his robes. The merchant, meanwhile, begins to waddle off, but you give him a sound kick to the gut, which knocks him down and out for the count. Startled, the rogue lunges at Raimondo, but awkward as the longsword is in close combat, Raimondo expertly executes a single stroke, cutting down his opponent. Looking up at you, Raimondo nods and gives you a toothy grin.
Good work.
Turning away, Raimondo wipes off his blade just as your comrades come running.
Grab the fat one. We'll take him home with us.
Before you can even take a breath, someone gives you a jab on the shoulder and gestures for you to take up your part of the rotund merchant laying on the ground. And stooping down and seizing the man by his fine robes, you and about four other people heave him up and begin what is going to be a very long trip home. You heave the thick doors of the garrison closed and take up a torch from its holder in the wall. Moving through damp and dark corridors, you try to ignore the sharp and salty taste that hangs in the air. Reaching a staircase, you quickly ascend, your ears filling with the sounds of waves crashing against the rocks. You step up and onto a landing, greeted by your Lombard companions. They are all dressed in black tunics, trousers, and cloaks, each holding a torch aloft. The flames of each torch whip around wildly, harassed by the gales which disturb the inky black Mediterranean. As you move forward, you come to see the large hole in the wall where the bricks have fallen away to create a perilous balcony over the sea. And standing out on the very edge of the deadly drop is the merchant you captured. He's bound in chains all around his body, and he's soaking wet, either from his own sweat or from the spray of the sea which explodes upward every other second. Raimondo stands before the bound merchant, likewise robed in black, looking like death himself, save for his carefree smile. He looks to you as you approach, you nod in the affirmative, prompting him to turn back to the matter at hand. Placing a hand on the merchant's shoulder, he leans in as if to whisper, but shouts to ensure that his words are not lost in the howling of the midnight wind.
I understand that you and I are of the same country. So, you must know that while I am fond of speaking, I do not care to repeat myself.
The merchant nods, his jowls shaking.
Eccellente. Allora, you claim to be a merchant, but the villagers say that you arrived with no goods and little coin to trade with. In fact, save for one fellow selling fish, you conducted no business with anyone in the area. So, tell me then, what do you trade in, amico?
You have it all wrong. I lost my goods on the way to Fraxinetum. I was simply trying to arrange safe passage home.
The merchant looks at Raimondo with wide, expectant eyes. He nods and grins, offering a grotesque and quaking caricature in the light of the dancing flames.
This is all a misunderstanding. I swear.
Raimondo turns away from the man and nods, crossing his arms and furrowing his brow as if in deep contemplation. The merchant stands there at the edge, his eyes darting from Raimondo's back to the waters behind him. Raimondo scratches his head and then chuckles to himself. Everyone else starts laughing, save for you. The merchant, too, joins in the laughter, wheezing as he does. And suddenly, Raimondo spins around and delivers a brutal kick to the man's chest, sending him flying over the ledge. You instinctively surge forward, but one of the Lombards blocks your advance. You hear the merchant's panicked screams, and then the sharp clanging of metal as a chain you had previously not noticed pulls tight against a winch in the wall, which is manned by one of the Lombards. Following the chain from its source, you see it running down across the floor before taking a sharp turn over the ledge. Listening carefully, you can hear the labored whimpering of the merchant down below. Raimondo peers over the ledge, and after a good minute or so, he signals for the man operating the winch to draw back the chain. The Lombard does so with some effort, and after his initial exertion, he calls over another fellow to assist him. Some heaving and grunting later, the merchant lays flat on his back, drenched and shivering as he takes deep and labored breaths. Kneeling down, Raimondo seizes the merchant by the jowls and gives his head a friendly shake.
Lie to me again, and we'll leave you as a late supper for the fish. Understood?
The merchant nods incessantly. Raimondo heaves the fellow up and places him back at the edge. Turning, Raimondo shouts an order over his shoulder.
Give me a bit more slack on the chain, per favore.
The merchant's eyes go wide, and he shakes violently, trying to grasp at Raimondo's cloak.
I'll tell you anything, messere. Whatever you want to know, I will do anything.
Tell me then, why are you actually here in Provence?
I am here on behalf of Berengar of Ivrea, the rightful king of Italy. Your Saracen patron has blocked the Alpine passes, preventing King Berengar from going south to claim his throne.
My patron would. We have a most favorable agreement with the current king, Hugo of Arve. Berengar is no friend of my patron, and as far as I'm aware, he is accursed among the great houses of Francia.
Are you not a child of Christ yourself, Messere? And an Italian? Have you no qualms working for the scourge of God? Do you take no issue with the pillaging of churches and monasteries by the Saracens?
The Lord employs the Saracens to punish the faithless rulers of Christendom. Why then should I not do likewise? We are well fed and paid handsomely by our patron, and we have never personally despoiled any Christian building. In fact, all Christians are free to practice their faith without molestation within the realm of Fraxinetum, and that right is guaranteed by the man who rules it.
The merchant looks utterly desperate, and between the tremors which rack his body and the blasting gale, he looks ready to plummet into the obsidian surf below. Dropping to his knees, the merchant looks up at Raimondo with glassy eyes, fear replaced by something else. Something like the eyes of the Roman wolf.
What if you ruled Fraxinetum?
Raimondo cackles, nearly crumbling over from the sheer fits of laughter. Most of the Lombards join in the fun, as do you, if somewhat reluctantly. Then, Raimondo ceases his laughter and slaps the merchant, causing him to crumple back. But Raimondo seizes him by the collar, preventing him from tumbling over the ledge.
Who are you to confer that privilege?
Berengar and those who support him have promised great rewards for all who assist him in returning to his rightful throne. If you help Berengar return righteous rule to Italy, and perhaps Provence, he shall not hesitate in making you its steward.
Raimondo slowly turns to face you all, his expression having turned cool and hard to read. He signals for you all to go, and when nobody budges, he stamps his foot on the ground and screams,
"Get out!"
That's enough to send everyone scrambling. The Lombards all rush down the staircase and head for the exit. You linger but a moment before an icy glare from Raimondo compels you to flee after your comrades. You emerge from the garrison and have the door slammed shut behind you by your partners in arms. You all huddle about, covering your faces as best as you can with your cloaks. Not a word passes between you and anyone else. These are mercenaries, after all, and their loyalty is first and foremost to their paymaster, Raimondo. That he might be considering the betrayal of his patron is nothing to these men. But you have no doubt that if you voiced your concerns now, you'd be tossed into the sea without a prayer in the world. And so you wait in oppressive silence, trying your best to look indifferent. You dare not meet the gaze of any Lombard, fearing that a flicker of doubt might get you run through, or worse. And so you just stand there, doing nothing but breathing until the doors of the garrison fly open. The merchant comes scuttling out, making frequent half-turns and bowing to Raimondo, who follows him out. Raimondo gives the merchant a kick in the rear and sends him on his way without so much as a word. You watch the thick-set fellow scuttle off into the shadows and then turn back to greet Raimondo. Your commander gives you all a subtle smile.
Allora, that's enough for one night. Sleep well, mi amici. Tomorrow, we have business at La Rocca.
And with that, Raimondo strolls off, covering his mouth to hide a powerful yawn. Everyone else likewise disperses, and for fear of sticking out, you do not linger. You melt into the shadows and keep a steady pace as you walk the dark streets, pausing every now and then to look over your shoulder until finally you reach your lodgings. You rub your eyes, still hanging on to the sweet embrace of sleep. All around you, the haunting call of the muezzin rings out, rousing the faithful. Observing in respectful silence, you and your Lombard companions wait out the ritual. You stand on the side of a steep mountain, barely able to see one another in the first morning rays. The stars are still visible up above, growing fainter as day finally overcomes night, and as the call to prayer finally subsides. Dawn wrests control of the sky, with the fiery sun rising up over your destination, silhouetting the walls and towers of Fortress Fraxinetum. You begin your ascent once more, following the effortless footsteps of Raimondo up the steep and narrow steps carved into the side of the mountain. Glancing out at the surrounding landscape, you once again lose yourself in the beauty of the Massif des Morts, with the mountain range gleaming like gold in the light of the young sun. And as you round the mountainside, your gaze turns to the sparkling waters of the Mediterranean, from whence the present masters of Provence once sailed. Positioned as it is, the fortress offers an unparalleled view of the countryside and sea, ensuring that those who man its walls might always see their foes coming. Arriving at the gates, and with the last vestiges of night retreating, You can finally appreciate the antiquity of the old Roman walls. Famous as this fortress now is throughout Francia, there is nothing lavish or ornamental about it. The current occupants saw no need to improve upon the original design, opting instead to replace the odd stone here or there. Round and square towers coming right to the edge of the slope offer little footing for besiegers, while an arched gate, defended by thick wooden doors, provides only one way in or out. On Raimondo's orders, you halt. Two Muslim soldiers, Andalusis by their garb, step forward to confer with your commander. You mark the colorful tunics which peer out from under their long male shirts, and the baggy trousers which are also sported by the guards. Friendly words in Arabic pass between Raimondo and the guards before they finally heave open the doors and motion for you to enter. Following Raimondo, you step into the fortress, entering a very tight courtyard in which a number of Andalusi soldiers are stretching and warming up for the day's patrols. Spears and short swords are handed out from a nearby armory, and buckets of fresh water are carried in by teenaged attendants in simple tunics and trousers. Everyone greets you with either a nod or a smile, or at least they greet Raimondo that way. Everyone pays little mind to you or the Lombards. This morning routine is still very much alien to you. Fraxinetum is the heart of Muslim-controlled Provence, and yet Raimondo and his Lombard mercenaries are routinely ushered in and greeted without so much as an inspection. You'd heard that Raimondo is one of the highest paid men in the realm, and that should attest to the devotion that this Christian offers towards his Muslim employer. But, after last night, you can't help but feel like the soldiers of Fraxinetum are being a little too lax with the hired help. Out of a nearby corridor, you see heavily armed Andalusi soldiers emerging, covered head to toe in chainmail and sporting round helmets with a heavy brow and nose guard. You've only seen them a few times now, but you know these men to be the elite cavalry of Fraxinetum. The Ghazis whose families first seized this land, and whose sons now project the realm's power over the neighboring Christian principalities. Armed with long sabers in the Moorish fashion, with curved blades and a substantial handle, the soldiers cut an imposing figure. Every other Muslim in the fort stands at attention as the cavalry clear the doorway and then turn to face it. From within the corridor, you then see the figure of a young man appear, dressed in fine robes which sweep the ground he walks upon. This young fellow sports a short beard and lets but a few fringes of his thick hair spill out from under his tightly wound turban. While not large or threatening in appearance, he does command an air of authority, immediately compelling utter silence from everyone present the moment he comes to a stop in front of Raimondo. This is the Ka'id, the governor of Fraxinetum, Nasser ibn Ahmad. "Assalamu alaikum," says Nasser to Raimondo, offering a faint nod of the head to the wily Italian. In return, Raimondo takes a deep bow and offers a blessing in return. You and the Lombards bow as well, though few bend over as much as Raimondo does. "Wa alaykum salam." Nasser motions for Raimondo to stand up straight, and then motions for the rest of his men to go about their business again. The cavalry, however, remain at attention, mere feet from their charge.
"What can I do for you, Raimondo?"
"Your Excellency might do me the honor of accompanying you on your next inspection of the frontier. If I recall correctly, you are headed to the Valley of Poenina."
"Indeed I am.
A company of Burgundians are seeking substantial trading privileges, and I think it best to meet them myself. Besides, I could do with escaping the heat these days."
Nasser pauses a moment, looking down, perhaps in reflection, and then locks eyes with Raimondo again.
"Are you finding things boring here at home?"
"Anything but, Your Excellency. However,
I think it would be helpful to have a Christian such as myself on hand to ascertain the true intentions of the traders. Or at the very least, so that there are no finer points lost in the negotiation.
Nasser ponders this, pacing about the courtyard as Raimondo waits with a disarming smile. A long, awkward beat passes as Nasser continues to consider the fairly simple offer. You wonder if someone saw you all last night, and if word of sinister affairs has spread among Nasser's men. Might the gates of the fort be closed this very moment, and every blade turned on you in an instant? You begin to perspire, feeling the heat building up under your tunic. You tug at your collar ever so slightly to let the warm air escape. Every moment that Nasser remains in silent contemplation is like an eternity within a brazen bull. But finally, Nasser strides over and places a hand on Raimondo's shoulder.
I would be most grateful for your assistance.
Nasser gestures to the corridor he had so recently emerged from.
Might we discuss the details in private?
Raimondo bows to Nasser and then turns to the rest of you.
Go and prepare provisions for the journey. Find good horses above all else. And then bring everything to the foot of the mountain once you're ready.
And with that, Raimondo vanishes into the belly of the fortress, alongside Nasser, disappearing behind a wall of cavalry soldiers. Behind you, the gates to the fortress open, and the guards gesture for you and your Lombard comrades to depart. You gladly take them up on their offer, leading your group as you exit the fort. Beginning your descent of the mountain, you dare not look back. Your mind races again, drawing apocalyptic visions of the guards running out after you, or a hail of arrows descending upon you as you clamber down the mountainside. Every step becomes a marathon as you hurry down, praying that Raimondo does nothing foolish like pulling a knife on Nasser as soon as they go about their secret colloquy. You have half a mind to snatch a horse and ride off into the shadows of the Massif de Mor, as Raimondo embarks on his overthrow of Fraxinetum. Above all else, one thing is certain. It would be extremely foolish to stick around. Folly, it seems, is contagious, or at least the easiest of illnesses to contract. When handed a golden opportunity to ride off into the sunset, you instead deliberated for too long. And now, here you are, at the very edge of the realm, riding behind Raimondo and Nasser, flanked on either side by the cream of Fraxinetum's cavalry. All around you, the peaks of the Pennine Alps seem to collapse inward, underscoring how stuck you really are. Many opportunities to vanish into the night came and went over your advance into the far reaches of Nasser's realm. But at every turn, cowardice and uncertainty ensured that you would not mount your horse and ride off into the night. And once you'd entered the territory of the Valais, it was far too late. To depart now would mean certain death among the valleys and passes of the Pennine Alps. At least the view is nice, though the valleys are carpeted with the dry and yellowing stalks of grass and withering trunks of conifers, the snow-capped peaks are breathtaking, far exceeding the Massif des Morts in height and girth. Where there are flashes of green here and there, you find pines congregating like weary travelers on the low hills and up the rocky faces of the mountains. At regular intervals, typically at the entrance and exit of every alpine pass, you come across a small but sturdy fort erected with timber sourced from the local pines. Not unlike the trees which offered their trunks to protect the forts, the general character of these installations is prickly, with stakes surrounding the perimeter and tall guard towers rising up from a central spike. From within the forts, you can spy the largely Andalusi soldiers who keep watch over the valleys. Muslim power, it seems, is unchallenged, even this deep into what would one day become a canton of Switzerland. Nasser's men secure the passes to prevent the Frankish princes from marching over the Alps like Hannibal and his conquering hordes. Discipline among the commanders of these forts is strict, with small detachments marching out to meet and escort Nasser, and each commander insisting that the young master be briefed on the comings and goings of everyone who passed under their watchful gaze. You watch from horseback as Nasser receives written accounts of every toll paid, taking time with each commander at every fort to arrange for accurate tolls to be forwarded to the Mediterranean capital of the realm. Raimondo, it seems, also has business at every fort, following up Nasser's fiscal to-dos with a private chat, often while the young governor is out of earshot. Subtle nods are given, and Raimondo offers a deep and respectful bow to each commander, offering parting words of good fortune in Arabic. This confounds you, and the apparent ignorance of Nasser to these suspicious meetings makes you question how he has managed to hold on to his realm for so long. Every night that you are compelled to rest at one of these forts, you wonder if one of the commanders will plunge a dagger into Nasser's back. But every morning you wake up and set out for the next few forts with Nasser looking utterly at ease the entire way. Raimondo, too, maintains an air of cool confidence, always riding side by side with Nasser, conversing about the most mundane of topics. If Raimondo's plan is to betray his patron, he is playing the role of Judas as well as Orpheus might pluck his lyre. Finally, one chilly morning, you descend into the midst of a misty valley, emerging just as the sun banishes the hazy hues of dawn. This vibrant and verdant valley is, unlike the others before it, inhabited. Between the enveloping forests of pines is a small village made up of quaint stone abodes. If you had to hazard a guess, you think Nasser's retinue might actually outnumber the residents of this hamlet, so few and modest are the homes. There is one large cabin in the center of the village, located just a few feet away from a tiny stone chapel, and it is in front of this central structure that you and everyone else dismount. But the villagers emerge from their homes to greet their alien suzerain. Every villager here looks to be of Frankish or Celtic descent, with red and blonde hair capping every head. They are all simple folk, wearing thick trousers or dresses, many wrapping heavy cloaks around themselves. There is an air of animosity between the villagers and the regiment of Andalusi cavalry, with suspicious gazes exchanged between both cohorts. So far from Fraxinetum, it seems the locals are less accustomed to Muslim rule. From among the gathered villagers, a rather portly man of apparent Frankish extraction emerges to greet Nasser, bowing profusely to him and gesturing to the cabin. This man introduces himself to Raimondo as the village chief, and gestures for Raimondo and Nasser to enter the cabin. Obliging him, Nasser enters, with Raimondo following behind. The cavalry and the Lombards form up around the cabin, taking up positions as guards. You are about to find your own spot to watch, but Raimondo sticks his head out from inside the cabin and motions for you to come in. Why me?
I've noticed you have an ear for languages. I'm worried our hosts might have a particularly thick dialect.
You stand there, unsure of what to do. Might Raimondo be on to you? Does he suspect that you'll tell Nasser of his potential treachery? Or, maybe, he's simply looking to eliminate loose ends, or keep a direct eye on you. You are the newest addition to his team, and therefore your loyalty is more suspect than anyone else. Rather, in stark contrast to the unflinching loyalty of the Lombards. Either way, you certainly can't run now. You'd never escape the valley, so you relent, nodding and stepping inside. Entering the cabin, you find that it has been prepared for a fantastic feast. A long table flanked by two rows of cushioned seats awaits, sporting enough food to see a small army through the winter. Succulent roast birds, meat pies, pottages, accompany roasted vegetables and roots. On a small table to the side, you can see tarts and sweetbreads waiting to punctuate the meal with a sweet end. You also take note of the absence of any foods or drinks which might be considered haram. Pork is non-existent, as is any liquid which might inhibit the self-restraint of man. The men responsible for this banquet of excess stand at the far end of the room, swaddled in fine fur cloaks and velvety tunics dripping with gold and silver chains and medallions. Each of the rotund fellows offer a faint bow to Nasser and step forward to offer him the greetings due to a ruler. As the five of them do so, you notice another figure standing in a corner of the cabin, blending in with the servants awaiting their orders. It takes you a moment, but you recall the wily features of this fellow, thinking of the merchant that Raimondo had so recently thrashed and colluded with on that dark and stormy night. Now, dressed in the dark robes of a Benedictine monk, he stands by, observing as Nasser greets the wealthy men. You decide not to look at the fellow for too long, and instead take a seat as directed by the servants. Sitting at the table, just two spots removed from Nasser, you look around and wonder what plot might be in motion. The servants have the appearance of good, honest folk, with meager frames and eyes that betray exhaustion rather than malice. Your guess is that they are villagers conscripted into this loathsome service by the village chief, or perhaps the commander of the nearest fort. The wealthy men appear too heavy-set to spring into action and take the Kaid's life, and the village chief is likewise too bulky of a man to overcome the fit young ruler of Fraxinetum. Only you and Raimondo, both mercenaries by trade, could manage the deed, and you obviously have no such intentions. That only leaves the man seated between you and Nasser. You pick at your food for what feels like an eternity, with the meal dragging on thanks to the uncouth jokes issuing from the mouths of the wealthy men, who you learn are apparently Burgundian merchants. These jovial, if crass fellows butter up Nasser with compliments and continue to send food his way, much to the consternation of the servants as Nasser politely refuses the repeat helpings. Finally, Nasser stands and addresses the men, cutting the rowdy banter short.
"Gentlemen, your hospitality has been magnificent. I did not expect such kind and generous treatment from those who should be my natural enemies. I thank you for recognizing your fellow man in this humble servant of Allah."
Nasser places a hand on Raimondo's shoulder and smiles.
"I long for the day when the princes of Christendom might see my people and I as mere neighbors, much in the manner of my faithful retainer, Raimondo. I prefer the word amico, but I appreciate the sentiment nonetheless, messere."
Raimondo reclines in his seat, shoveling grapes into his mouth as Nasser continues.
"All that said, I understand that cooperation often begins with commerce. You wish to obtain free passage through the mountains so that you might reduce your costs."
The merchants all nod in unison, leaning in to hear what Nasser might say next.
"If that is the case, I am afraid I must decline. The tariffs obtained by my tolls sustain the realm and ensure that every denizen under my dominion enjoys some measure of prosperity, be he Christian or Muslim. I cannot, therefore, allow free trade."
The mood sours, with the merchants all leaning back in their seats, their expressions going from captivated to cool in seconds. Even Raimondo's perpetual smile melts away as he slips out of his chair and wanders over to the dessert table.
"That said," Nasser continues, "I am willing to relax the rate, provided you ensure a certain volume of goods passes through my realm every year. We have many merchants who frequent our shores in search of amber and fine furs, so you would find your trips quite rewarding, I'm sure."
Leaning back, Nasser slings an arm over the back of his seat and offers the merchants a pleasant smile. The offer was good, generous even, but the greedy assembly still looks on with cold, unfriendly eyes. Glancing over to the corner of the room, you see the imposter monk looking on with wide eyes, his hands visibly shaking as they drift into the pocket of his robe. You chance to look back and see Raimondo smile in the direction of the imposter before shoveling a tart into his mouth. Something's up, and yet, Nasser maintains an air of complete composure.
I see that my offer has perhaps offended you. Or perhaps it is that the terms were not what you were looking to discuss.
No, they weren't, says the imposter monk. We don't want to move goods through the passes. We need to move men. But you won't allow that.
The fellow slowly stalks across the cabin, drawing a small knife from his robe. The servants recoil in horror, but the merchants all rise from their seats, producing blades from within their robes, threatening the staff to remain silent.
If you had just gone on with King Berengar's request, we would have left you filthy Saracens alone. But now, you have forced our hand.
Nasser stands up in open defiance of the wretches. All blades point towards him, and hungry grins flash across the faces of everyone wielding a blade.
Don't bother calling for help. Your own retainers delivered you into our hands. Every soldier and every wretch in this village shall have their 30 pieces of silver for their silence.
Nasser looks back to Raimondo, and he receives little more than a shrug as Raimondo spins a small dagger around in his palm.
I see.
Nasser looks at you, and you put your hands up, not wanting anything to do with what's about to transpire.
It would appear King Berengar drives a hard bargain.
Nasser folds his hands together and takes a deep breath, casting a long, drawn-out gaze across the room. The imposter monk approaches, his blade raised, ready to plunge it into Nasser's exposed throat. But big as the man is, he leaps forward with surprising speed, plunging towards his target with reckless abandon. But in a flash, the imposter stops dead in his tracks, fumbling his knife. His eyes go wide, as do yours, as do those of the merchants. It takes you a moment, but eventually, you spot the dagger so freshly embedded in the assailant's chest. Apparently, the murderous fool doesn't realize that the knife is there until he sets his own eyes on it. Not a moment after making that realization, he looks over at Raimondo, standing there like a pitcher at the plate. Then he collapses into a heap on the floor, dead. There's a long, drawn-out silence as the remaining assailants look at each other, knives still held out in Nasser's direction. You look back at Raimondo, who is brushing himself off, a big smile on his face. He looks to you and motions with two open palms to push something up. You don't understand right away, but after a particularly exaggerated motion, it clicks. You turn back and, rising up, you tip the table over, sending food flying into the faces of the merchants, knocking several of them back. One lunges out at Nasser, but you seize your chair and swing it, knocking the blade out of the attacker's hand and probably breaking his arm while you're at it. Ora! Shouts Raimondo, and in an instant, the door to the cabin opens, with both the Lombard mercenaries and the Andalusi cavalry stepping inside, swords and spears at hand. The soldiers quickly surround the merchants, compelling them to drop their weapons. There is little resistance offered by the would-be assassins, and, with the situation diffused quickly, Nasser steps forward to offer a few parting words.
If your king was so desperate to find a more favorable arrangement, he would have done well to negotiate better. To me, he is no different from you or Otto or even myself, really. Just as my men sack monasteries and, yes, raid villages, so too do your Christian princes set fire to entire cities and plunder the worldly wealth of their victims. I would just as happily treat with one as I would slaughter the other. It is all a matter of the terms.
Nasser raises a single finger up, holding it out for all the merchants to see.
I will permit one of you to live and deliver this message to King Berengar. I leave it to my men to decide whom. And with that, Nasser signals for you and Raimondo to accompany him out. Almost immediately, the merchants begin to cry out for mercy and reach for Nasser, but they are thrown to the ground and trampled upon by the soldiers. You head for the exit, sparing a parting glance at the Lombards and Andalusi soldiers who laugh among themselves as they decide how they'll butcher the merchants.
"Remember, mi amici, we need one alive,"
Raimondo chuckles, throwing his arm over your shoulder as you step back out into the village. The door to the cabin slams shut behind you, muffling the panicked screams of the merchants. You walk alongside Nasser and Raimondo, heading for a set of horses that the village chief has waiting for you. The sounds of slaughter, dampened as they are, slip out from the cabin behind you. Trying your best to ignore the carnage, you breathe in the fresh valley air. You help Nasser mount his steed, and then do likewise for Raimondo, before heaving yourself up onto your own horse. Nasser looks around the valley, a subtle smile on his face.
"I ride for the fort. You two take time and enjoy yourselves. I shall ensure that your loyalty is rewarded adequately when we return to Fraxinetum."
And with that, Nasser rides off at a slow trot, completely unfazed by the events that just transpired, and, apparently, completely untouchable. You watch him go, confused but compelled to admire the manner in which he conducts himself. He's not quite a philosopher, nor is he a brave warlord, but he is the even hand that sustains this historical anomaly now stretching from the Mediterranean to the banks of the Rhone. Raimondo circles you with his horse, that big, silly grin painted across his face.
"I wasn't so sure about you, but when the time came, you did well. I hope you will consider staying in our service for a little while longer."
"You weren't sure about me. For a minute there, I thought you were going to betray Nasser."
"I could have. But then, Nasser had the better offer. That is the way in Fraxinetum. That man doesn't care whether you pray to Christ or venerate Muhammad. Offer good service, and in exchange, the world is yours."
That was Welcome to Fraxinetum by Kevin Valbanese. The Twilight Histories is supported by our Patreon community. When you join us on Patreon, you will get access to shows not available to the public, and you may even get your idea produced into a Twilight History show. Please join us on Patreon by going to the website at twilighthistories.com, then follow the link. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time. Take care.
Hey, I need your help.
The year is 2045. In Night City, there's a bar called No Latency.
Ping runs the bar, it's just a bar.
But it's not just a bar. I'm Ping, and I used to work for Domino.
I'm sorry, who are you?
I'm Domino.
But now I need to save them. But I can't do it alone. So I hired some help. Some old friends.
On my face, there will just be a flashing question mark.
Sir, I'm gonna need you to take a step back. The vehicle is armed.
And some new.
We're looking around, trying to find this no latency place.
Your bird looks like it is in great pain. Someone should put it out of its misery.
Am I gonna need some help?
Yo, what's up, TV dude?
I'm the cowboy.
It's me, I'm Tuna.
I'm Stranger.
and we'll make some enemies.
I'm Steve, and I'm here to be!
Arasaka would like to discuss Domino. We will find you. Come quietly.
All right, man, I guess we gotta fix this up. Who the f*** is this guy?
Because if we don't save Domino, we'll all be dead.
No Latency. A Cyberpunk Red roleplay podcast. New episodes every Wednesday. See you in Night City.